Welcome to Off the Court, presented by Point Guard U. Today, we are joined by Bryce Simon, former Division I basketball player, podcast host, sports writer, and coach. Bryce, super pumped to have you on today.
What's up, Reed, man? I think we scheduled this a few weeks ago, and I've just been counting down the days and then today the hours until we got to do it. So as you mentioned, I love podcasting. Sometimes I got a host. I enjoy it even more when I get to guests. So I'm super excited to join you, man. I appreciate you having me on.
That's awesome. I'm honored. I'm pumped to have you on. A little bit about Bryce. So Bryce, legend in Kansas. I mean, he is a great basketball player, an even better guy, awesome coach. We were lucky enough to have Bryce come coach at our camp in Goodland, Kansas this past summer, and got to spend the day with Bryce. It was a hard one. It was a full workout of a day, but we were super lucky to have Bryce. And now Bryce, Kansas, you're very familiar with Kansas. Obviously you live in Kansas right now. Kind of get into your hometown a little bit of Syracuse, Kansas. Probably mistaken a lot for Syracuse, New York. And I'm familiar with Syracuse, Kansas only because I graduated from a high school about an hour or so away. But for our audience, can you please kind of paint the picture of Syracuse, Kansas and what that looked like?
Yeah, if you see me looking down, I take notes. I have to take notes or I forget stuff. And so, yeah, you talked about that long day at PGU. I told you, man, like I may have lied to you if I hadn't only committed to one day. I was so tired that I'm getting old, man. And so I was like, Reed, if I would have committed to 2 days, I may have caught a cough or something because I was gassed after one day. And then, so I think my real GM page, which please don't do it because then you'll think less of me as a basketball player. But I think my real GM page actually says Syracuse, New York. It doesn't say Syracuse.
Of course it does, right?
Syracuse, Kansas, a little small town, middle of nowhere, Kansas. Not middle of Kansas, but middle of nowhere. We're 20 miles from Colorado. Hour and a half from Oklahoma. I now live in Lakin, Kansas. This is where me and my family live, where I teach and coach, which is just 30 miles east of that. So growing up in Syracuse was great. That's where all my family lived. It's where my dad grew up, strong farming community overall. And that's what my family does. That's what my wife's family does as well. She played a school in the league and she actually was a college hooper as well. But yeah, that's where I grew up. And then after college, Reed, I moved back there and I spent a lot of years in Syracuse before we eventually moved to Lakin a few years ago.
That's awesome. Now, for our audience, this is normal for you and I. If anything, it was bigger than my graduating class. But for our audience, if I'm understanding correctly, your graduating class is around 30-something, 35?
Yep. So 35 in my graduating class, whenever I went to school, and I know we'll get to this more in depth in a little bit, but I eventually went to school in Washington, D.C., and mm-hmm. I was known as the one stoplight kid whenever I showed up out there because just, you know, my teammates, the other kids at the school just couldn't believe that towns like that really existed. You know, everybody kind of laughs about it. But yeah, one stoplight, small little community. But it's a great place to grow up and it's a great place to raise a family as we're doing now.
Yeah, that's awesome. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm also talking to the valedictorian.
Yeah, yes you are.
That is awesome.
And people often remind me, Reed, that it wasn't that hard with only 35 kids in the class, so it wasn't that big of an accomplishment. But
I had a graduating class of 12 and I wasn't anywhere as close. So easy, Bryce, as you hurt my feelings. So you kind of hinted towards, I think, two steps down the line. So from Syracuse, you were a 1,000-point scorer, legend for Syracuse, Kansas. You went on to play JUCO ball at Pratt, which I believe your team was loaded. You weren't starting anyone under 6'4". Tell us a little bit about what it was like playing at Pratt and playing in that Jayhawk conference.
Yeah, so a real nice high school career. We made it to state 1 year, had a lot of success. Getting recruited out of high school was essentially no Division I offers. Even struggled to get Division II offers. Like I would have loved. Bob Chipman was a legend whenever I was growing up. He'd come out and do these camps for Pioneer Communications. Couldn't get them to recruit me. So it was all JUCO. And I was going to go to Garden City for a long time. And then Trevor Rolfs at Pratt came in late and, you know, me and my family just fell in love with him and that program. And so that's where I went. My first year, I came off the bench, had good success. And then I started getting recruited in between my freshman and sophomore year. And then, yeah, my sophomore year, I believe all five of us went Division I and the first guy off the bench went Division I. So we had like five or six Division I kids on that team. And JUCO, it made me grow up, man. It was a different environment. It's a different level of athlete, as you can imagine, than what you and I played against. Obviously Sharon Springs and Syracuse used to play, or I assume they still do.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But, what it ended up being, it was a really nice buffer for me. I needed it because I needed to see that level of competition. AAU wasn't a thing. I didn't know what AAU was, even if I would have been good enough. And so I needed that buffer of a jump in competition, athleticism, get away from home a little bit. Or if I would have been good enough to go D1 out of high school, Reed, I don't think I would have made it. I would have been homesick. I would have been overwhelmed. And so that was a really productive and growth 2 years there at Pratt.
Yeah. And I definitely think that's, you touched on something, but so many kids deal with that. You know, so many, the talk is always D1 or bust. But even just like the emotional side, the emotional maturity of like, you're 18, you know what I mean? To go from, you know, your parents are cooking you dinner every night and you're home and there's a safe place to, I'm living with a bunch of people I don't know. I'm really far from home. I can't go home. That's definitely, I think, something that doesn't get talked about enough. So, Pratt was obviously a growing point for you, right?
Yeah.
But even still, at 20, I imagine, was it, you know, then going to, was it 20 when you went to DC?
So I grew 18. Yeah, I was 20 years old and had just turned 20 a few months before.
What was that like? I mean, going from Kansas to Washington, DC. I mean, this question's coming from someone who's lived in Kansas before. I mean, the first obvious one is we're talking about the horizon, right?
Yeah, no, it's funny that you say that, because that's what when I went on my recruiting visit, I told Coach Jones, I said, Coach, I can't see anything. And he's like, what are you talking about? Like, there's buildings everywhere. I was like, yeah, but that's not what I mean. I can't see the clouds. I can't see the sky. I can't see storms rolling in. Like, if you grow up where we grew up, Reed, you spent evenings sitting outside or playing outside or whatever, and you just see, you know, stuff, the sunset, the sunrise, storms rolling in. That's the stuff I loved. And I'll tell you this, I had never flown on a plane until my official visit to American. So I was 20 years old, whatever. Me and my family went on an official visit to American. It's the first time I had flown. So all of this was really new to me, new experience. I visited Seton Hall on that same visit. And that was, you know, I got to visit Madison Square Garden, me and my family on that visit as well. So that was a really cool experience. But DC was still such a culture shock, because at Pratt, I was 3 hours away. So I was away, but if something crazy happened, I knew I could just jump in the car and go home, right? When I went to DC, it wasn't that easy. It was a plane ticket and this whole, you know, whole thing. And as you know, the airport's not right down the road in Southwest Kansas at Syracuse and Sharon Springs.
We're going to Denver. Right?
Exactly. That's what everybody's like, oh, where you fly out of? Denver. Oh, you live that close to Denver? Not really. I live 4 hours from Denver. The drive is longer than the flight. So
yeah.
You felt very isolated. It turns out to be a great experience, which I'm sure we'll talk about, but I was homesick. I will admit I was very homesick.
So what did the decision process look like for choosing American University?
You know, it's funny. I think about this question often, Reed. Like, it was all guts. I had never heard of American. I'll be straight up. I'm sure some people listening to this podcast have never heard of American either, but they called. They're in the Patriot League. So when they called me, the connection was Bucknell is in the Patriot League and they had knocked off KU in the NCAA tournament. And I'm a KU fan, so this is bad memories for me as well. But that's where it started. And then Coach Jones played at Virginia with Ralph Sampson. And I knew the whole Virginia got knocked off by Chaminade and the Maui Invitational. And then it was just relationships. Like, I'm sure we'll talk about this. Relationships is so huge. It's so huge. Like, how you can build relationships and massage relationships and connections and networks. You guys at PGU, you do an incredible job of this, the business as a whole. And so that's what it was. Like, the assistant coach that recruited me, like, I just liked him more than any of the others that recruited me. And I liked all of them a lot, but there was just a genuine connection. The crazy thing is he ended up leaving and he never got to coach me. The assistant coach that recruited me to American left like 3 months after I committed. And so I didn't even get to play for him, but that's what it comes down to.
Did that rattle you at all?
1,000%, because what I realized when that happened was I had very rarely talked to the other assistants, and I had talked to Coach Jones quite a bit, and me and Coach Jones are tight to this day, but Coach Jones is like, he's not like the most lovey-dovey type, so it wasn't like him and I were like super tight. And so when I got there, that's what I realized, Reed, was like this assistant coach that I really chose American for, he's not here. And so who's the one that's really looking out for me? Now, again, turns out to be a great experience, but it did rattle me and make me a little nervous.
Yeah. So I think your story can, I don't know many 1,000-point scorers who, you know, have great careers as you, but I do think some aspects of your story definitely resonate with a lot of the kids that we deal with at Point Guard U. Small town, overlooked, going into college, having to take unconventional routes, you know, didn't play AAU. It didn't do the things that a lot of parents think you need to do in order to get to the next level. You mentioned you weren't really getting heavily recruited out of high school. You know, what advice do you have for someone who's probably maybe struggling not getting recruited, or who, you know, later in your career when you were looking at American University and some other schools were getting recruited by them? Like, what advice do you have for kids who are navigating that process, either not getting recruited or getting recruited, and what they should look for during that?
So the first thing I want to say is, and I guess I'll brag a little bit here, is like, I think I'm one of the hardest workers in terms of that. Like, I spent, when I say I went to the gym every day, Reed, I legitimately went to the gym every single day from the end of my eighth grade year until like I was done playing. And so that's one thing I always want to let kids know is you have to really grind. You have to really work. You have to really love it. And I'm not talking about going and playing a tournament every single weekend. Well, I did that too, but I was in the gym getting shots up. I didn't have a trainer, any of that stuff. So that's the first thing. Second, if you're not getting recruited, use the power of social media and all of these, reach everybody. There are tons of people looking to help kids out. I want to help you out. Call me. I will help you out. I'm dealing with Division I coaches. We'll get to this later. I'm dealing with NBA teams. Call it like all of it. I also deal with NAI teams, JUCOs, all sorts of stuff. And so reach out to me. I'll help you. But people want to help these kids get somewhere. And if you're getting recruited, Reed, go where you are truly wanted and valued. I think that was the decisions. That's why my decisions worked out so well, is I didn't even realize I was doing it, but the two decisions I made, Pratt and American, I went to where those programs truly valued me and wanted me, and they took care of me. I could have went to a JUCO with a bigger name than Pratt. Again, like I said earlier, Seton Hall was recruiting me. It would have been really cool to say I was playing in the Big East, but I probably wasn't even good enough to go there. I don't know why. Like, I went where I went, and it worked out because I went where I was truly valued.
That's great advice. I love that. And that was also back when the Big East was the Big East,
yeah,
too,
yeah.
Which a lot of these kids don't even know about.
Yeah.
So, you know, as a junior, you started 31 games, and then, you know, the injury.
Yep.
Can you kind of walk us through, you know, what that looks like, how you handle that? I mean, emotionally, physically, rehab, like, put us in the mind of Bryce Simon after that injury.
Yeah, so all of this, you know, journey, small town high school, JUCO, Division I, I'm starting. We beat Maryland, Reed, right before Christmas, my junior year. It was probably the best game I ended up playing in college. Grievous Vasquez is a name people may know. We upset Maryland. Like, this is a big deal. Maryland's right there in the DMV area. We're one game from playing in the conference championship. So for people that, we're a one bid league, which means you have to win your conference championship to go play in the NCAA tournament. American has never made the NCAA tournament, Reed. We're one game from playing in that. I've started every game all year. Things had clicked here at the end of the year, playing well. And I come down for a rebound with about 2 minutes left to go in the first half, land on somebody's foot, and didn't know it at the time, of course, but I tear my ACL. So I have to watch my team the next game at home win the conference championship for the first time in school history, and I don't get a play. And I go through Selection Sunday. We go to Birmingham, Alabama as the 15 seed to play Tennessee, and I don't get a play. Now, I want to tell a quick story here. Coach Jones let me suit up, and he put me in at the end of the game. He let me go, and he said, "Who knew? I was only a junior. At that time, we thought I was going to be healthy and come back the next year. and he wanted to make sure I got in the box score. I'm forever grateful to him for that because he let me step on the floor. Long story short, or short as possible now, I have surgery, rehab, August of my senior year. I think I'm going to be back. Like, I think I'm going to be full strength for the season, right? I'm doing a workout. All of a sudden, something funny happens with my knee, tore a meniscus. And they do the MRI and they're like, Bryce, your ACL still looks funny. Like, we need permission to repair your ACL during this in case it's torn. So I go into surgery not knowing. I wake up, my ACL had been torn. Like, scar tissue had been holding it together so I could still rehab. So that's ACL tear number 2 in August of my senior year. So I have the surgery. And I was like, I'll get back for the second half of my senior year. I'll bust my butt. I'll rehab. I'm doing a workout in December. I'm back on the court doing 1-on-0 workouts in December. I'm going to get back for conference play, doing a workout on the court. Boom, blows out again. So I tore my ACL for the third time in December. And I just made the decision. I'm going to play on it torn. So what I did was I braced up and I played the rest of my, I played my senior year. I don't know how many games it is, 20 or something like that, with a torn ACL, coming off 3 tears and the surgeries and all that. Transitioned my game from being a 3 to a 4 man, played 9 or 10 minutes a night. I wasn't a huge factor, like, in all honesty, but I made some buckets here and there. We won the conference championship again, and we made it to the NCAA tournament, played Villanova in Philadelphia, had them down at halftime. Of course, they come back and they went to the Final Four that year, but I got a shot up in that game. I missed it, got a corner 3, but I'll tell you this. What I went through with rehab and all of that and the way I attacked rehab was probably the thing I'm most proud of in my career. Like, I don't know why my mindset was what it was. I can't pinpoint it, Reed, but I just made up my mind. I'm going to be the best ACL rehabber that this school has ever seen. And I think I attacked it. I'm pretty proud of what I did through my rehab, through handling those tears and those surgeries and everything I did through all of that.
That's awesome. And I think you kind of even may have already answered this, but I want to give you a chance to kind of fully answer it. We have a lot of kids, you know, who are listening to this, who may be battling back from an injury themselves. You know, what advice do you have for a kid in small town Kansas who's facing, you know, battling back from an ACL tear?
I think it's, you have to approach that like you would your love for the game of basketball or football or volleyball or track or whatever. That I essentially took my love for the game of basketball and I turned it into, I love rehab. And I mean, it was intense, Reed. I mean, 6 hours a day, 2-3 hour sessions early on. It was in, you know, surgery, I'm in rehab the day after. And I'm not saying that's what these kids are going to be doing, but that was my mindset. And so that's what I would tell these kids is you have to take your love for your sport, your dedication and commitment to your sport. And now it has to be towards rehab and getting healthy because that's the only way you're going to get to play your sport again.
I think there's takes a lot of discipline. And that reminds me of a quote. I'm going to butcher it, but it's, you know, doing things you don't like to do, but doing it like you love it.
Yes.
And I think you embody that really well. You know, something else that I wanted to talk to you about, I've been reading some of these articles that you've been writing and I've been seeing there are a lot of draft prospects. Can you tell us a little bit about what you've been doing with that?
Yeah. So if you see this Pistons window cover behind me, it's I do some media stuff. So I do a podcast with the Pistons or for the Pistons, not with the Pistons, about the Pistons. And then I started that turned into some NBA draft coverage. So I write for Draft Digest by SI. So I've got a chance to interview some really cool players. Liam McNeely, who we all thought was going to go to KU, but actually committed to Indiana. If you follow Prep Hoops. Omaha Ballou, who is at Iowa State. And then I just do scouting reports, stuff like that as well. And so, yeah, I really dove deep into NBA draft stuff. I recently got the opportunity to join Sam Vecenie on the Game Theory podcast. So if you're a podcast listener, just a fan of basketball, that's a really cool podcast. And then I won't say fully, but I also have a non-media NBA draft position. So I'll just say I do a lot of scouting and stuff of NBA draft prospects in a more private situation that's not NBA draft media or as much public.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you obviously spend a lot of time watching film on players. You know, like I've mentioned, our keeping in mind our audience, you know, we got a lot of kids who are trying to make it to the next level. With your background in film, you know, what are some of the things that you're looking for on film when you're watching players?
Yeah, so I'll tell you guys, I do breakdowns where I break down a kid's game and send the video to them. And we're talking about high level basketball players, guys that are going big time D1, guys that are going to be eventual NBA players. And I break down their games for them. And something like, it's all the little things that all of their coaches and their parents are telling them, Reed. I am breaking down how they're acting. I've broke down film where I've shown a player how he's acting on the sideline. And we're talking about a big time Division I recruit or a guy going to the NBA and saying, usually in a positive way, but I love the way you're interacting with NBA teams like that. They want to see that. I'm breaking down how they're communicating defensively. NBA teams want guys that are communicators defensively, rotations, boxing out and defensive rebounding, setting good screens, like all of the little things that everybody emphasizes. I'm doing that for guys that are at a high level. Now, yes, there's also the other aspects of it, Reed, but that's what I would tell these kids. You don't understand how much you can impact a game when you're a good teammate, when you're a good communicator, when you're a good screen setter, when you box out, when you rebound, when you run the floor, when you take charges. And all of that stuff is valued at every single level, from middle school, high school, NAIA, JUCO, Division I, all the way up to the NBA.
I love it. And you know firsthand, you cannot get to the next level unless you're doing those things. You just can't. I mean, there's every school has the best player to go through. And, you know, all, at the next level, JUCO and beyond, those teams are filled with kids on the bench who were the best players in their high school. So I think, you know, you really hit on it. It's those small things, and those are non-negotiables. Whereas I feel like a lot of times kids think, you know, sometimes I can communicate, sometimes I do hustle back, sometimes I'll take a trip. But those are like non-negotiables, crucial parts of being a successful basketball player at the next level.
I want to, Brandon Pajimski is a kid that I use as an example. So he's kind of up in your guys' area from Wisconsin, and he was at Santa Clara last year, got drafted in the first round by the Golden State Warriors. And I use Brandon as an example because Brandon, super skilled, Reed, can pass the ball, can shoot it all. But if you look at any one of his NBA draft scouting reports, very, very early in the scouting report, talks about his high level rebounding. This kid averaged like 7 or 8 rebounds a game as a guard, and it was a huge part of his sell to the next level. And I wonder, would he have been a first round pick if he wasn't such a high level rebounder? So like, I just like to use him as an example of, yeah, there's a guy that was super talented, averaging like 20 a game, doing all this stuff. But a major part of his scouting report on essentially any site you go look at was his rebounding. And so I think that's just, to me, rebounding is a low hanging fruit for a kid to say, hey, you want to get recruited? You're averaging 12 points a game. Maybe you're the fourth option offensively. You're not getting enough shots. Go grab 10 rebounds a game. I guarantee you, you'll get noticed.
100%. Those 50-50 balls, the more of them you get, the easier it is to win a game.
Yes, sir.
So, Bryce, all of our podcasts, what we do at the end, we wrap up with a little bit of some quick hitter questions. Call it full court press, all right? So I'm going to just rattle off a couple, and we'll see how it goes. Sound good?
Okay. Yes, sir.
All right, you ready? Let's do it. Favorite color?
Blue.
Favorite cereal?
Cinnamon Toast. No, Banana Nut Crunch.
Now, is it milk before cereal or cereal before milk?
No, I put my cereal first, then milk. I let it soak in to get a little bit soggy. I don't want crunchy cereal, so I let it soak it up real, real good. And then I always drink the milk. And Cinnamon Toast Crunch has the best flavored milk, bar none.
Facts. If you would have said milk before cereal, I would have had to end this podcast.
That doesn't even make sense. I don't understand.
It doesn't make sense. Favorite movie?
Ooh, Shawshank.
How long can you hold your breath?
Oh, not very. I'm old, Reed. Not very long.
Under a minute, over a minute.
Oh, no way, over a minute. No chance.
Okay.
I don't think anyway. Maybe I'd surprise myself, but I'm saying I would be proud of 30 seconds, I think.
Yeah, I feel like that's where I'd fall too. Moon landing, is it real or is it fake?
Real.
Okay. Would you rather give up appetizers or desserts for the rest of your life?
Desserts.
All right. Oh, wait. Wild. Appetizers so limited, desserts so wide. You sure?
No, I'm sure. I love appetizers, okay. Man. Like,
is it the wings?
Let's just hit up Applebee's, whatever, half price, whenever you can do that. And
Yeah.
I do eat desserts. Like, don't get me wrong. I will, you know, I will crush some crumble cookies. Do you know crumble cookies?
Oh yeah, we have a crumble right here in town.
So I get real frustrated because, like, I feel like I'm in the wrong that I eat. And do you eat an entire crumble cookie in one setting? That's the question.
Yeah, you have to.
Okay.
Unless the only asterisk is if you're like at a group event and people are getting like a box and you got to be considerate.
So that's where I feel super uncomfortable. So they brought crumble cookies. I'm a teacher. They brought them to the office one day and they were cut into like eights. And I was like, man, I kind of feel bad about myself that they feel like we only need to take 1/8 of a crumble cookie. 'Cause I mean, I've been known to eat two in one setting if I was really feeling it. So I do have a sweet tooth. Don't get me wrong, but I just like when I'm thinking of a restaurant I want to go to, the appetizers are always like at the, you know, cheese. I don't think I could live the rest of my life without cheese fries is what it comes
We
down to.
this appetizer conversation was caused some big controversy in the Point Guard U office. We were debating whether or not wings were a appetizer or not. So, because here's the deal: when I order wings, I get them as my entree. But
Yeah.
I'm also on team appetizer because when you go and look, like for example, you get half price appetizers at Applebee's, wings.
B-Dubs has ruined this, right? Because when you say wings, I think entree at this point in
Yep.
my life. But you make a good point because when we order pizza, we would get wings as an appetizer, not necessarily the entree. But I feel like B-Dubs has just turned this into like this is your actual meal to where. Interesting. I
Yeah.
like it.
So something to think about. Keeps me up
Yes.
at night.
I love it.
Best Gatorade color.
Orange.
Best player you've ever played against.
Okay. So, caveat, I was still recovering from the injury, but Blake Griffin, we opened at Oklahoma my senior year. So, I wasn't back yet. Insane.
That's awesome.
Insane. Like, he, when we walked into the gym, he already had us beat because he was out there doing a workout drenched in sweat. It wasn't just that Blake was so talented, it was the intensity that he played with also, along with the athleticism and everything else. Yeah, Blake Griffin was insane.
That's awesome. Loudest crowd you've ever played for.
All right, I'm gonna cheat here. There's no way it's the loudest, but I will tell you this. Some of these small gyms in Southwest Kansas, like we play for High Plains League championships. My junior year, I'll go with this one. My junior year, this is the year we go to state. We're down 20 at halftime to Sublette at Sublette. This has kind of become a rivalry. We're playing in Sublette for the sub-state championship. And I'm pretty sure the fire marshal either didn't show up or didn't check that there was the crowd was the stands were packed. There's people, you know, on the ends of the court, people waiting in the hallway. The environments just aren't the same, man. It's just not. And I played in some cool arenas, some cool experiences. There's nothing like a packed Southwest Kansas. I'm sure the same vibe in Indiana, a high school packed gym with people you know and recognize in the stands. There's nothing better than that. And I'll also say
Yeah.
this, don't be fun haters with student sections. Going at it with other team student sections was the funnest part of my high school basketball career. Down at Sublette, they used to chant my girlfriend's name, which is my now wife. They would chant her name at me whenever I had the ball in my hands. And then whenever I'd shoot free throws, they would yell her phone number at me. They'd rattle off her phone number to me. So I was like, and to me, it was cool. Like it was all part of it because, you know, when I got a bucket, I was shushing and, you know, all of that
Yeah,
stuff. So high school kids listening to me right now, don't take this advice. That was bad advice on my part. Cut this part out. Don't listen to me. I love student sections in this environment, though. I love that stuff.
nothing beats Kansas basketball where you shoot a corner three and get pushed back onto the court by people standing around watching.
Yes. Love it.
Well, Bryce, I've loved having you on off the court. Looking forward to hopefully having you out to South Bend, get you to a Notre Dame
I
game,
want to so bad.
and look forward to seeing you next summer at camp.
Yes, Reed, thank you so much. This was a blast. I appreciate it. And yeah, I want to get to South Bend so bad. Go Irish. I am a Notre Dame football fan and I want to get out for a basketball game. And then, yeah, I think you can probably talk me into one day of PGU again next year.
Sounds good, Bryce. I appreciate you, man.
Yep.